Okay, the case of Washington versus the Commonwealth. You've both signed in. You're all hands at...
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Haley.
Good morning.
Ready when you are, sir.
Thank you. I would like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may.
5 minutes, yes, sir.
We've given you quite a workout this week,
yes. Yes. May it please the court. Charles McKinley Washington was the subject of a revocation proceeding in which he had a situation very akin to what happened in the Harris case decided in the Supreme Court in 2010, situation where he'd been in the drug court program, and there was a drug court hearing that was all of 2 pages on September 15th of 2015, and the judge just simply doesn't hear any evidence or allow the Mr. Washington to have any opportunity to respond. There's no formal notice given of the revocation. He's just simply told by the judge, the drug court judge, you're revoked, and that was it. And then she appointed counsel to represent him. When we get to the hearing on December 16th before, in the Hampton Circuit Court, the formal revocation hearing, at the start of that hearing, the judge basically states he asked initially, has Washington actually on the record been dismissed from the drug court? Is that by agreement? Do you agree with that? The defendant's counsel responded, I don't believe my client has any record of dismissal by the drug court. That'd be our position. That's the essence of the problem for us to proceed. And basically indicated, he went on to say, the counsel for Mr. Washington, it's my understanding in speaking with my client that there was an event in Judge Jones's court that led to his removal from drug court, but our position here today would be that he wasn't involved in that, wasn't privy to that, didn't hear what was said, wasn't testified to, as presuming means by Mr. Washington, he didn't get a chance to testify, and there wasn't necessarily a record. So he's disputing that there had been a formal hearing. But then the judge notes, well, wait a minute, here's an order. On September 15th, the defendant appeared before Judge Jones, and the order entered that day was, quote, the defendant has failed to comply with the terms and conditions of the drug court. The court hereby terminates the defendant from further participation, unquote. And then Ms. Kavanaugh was appointed. So the evidence has already been determined. That's what the judge rules then. And so the judge says, and so this matter today comes before the court on a revocation. Well, actually, it comes on a sentencing because it's already been decided that he's revoked. At that point, he says, we have to have a pre-sentence report before we can sentence him, but we don't have one. At that point, the defense counsel says, it'd be our position, we'd like to argue the matter this morning, and the judge said, well, if in order to hear anything this morning, you're going to have to waive your right to the pre-sentence report. And so he says, all right, he confers with client, says, we've decided to waive the pre-sentence report. And then the judge says, all right, I find that the evidence is sufficient to find him guilty in violation of the condition of a suspended sentence. So ruling's made, no opportunity to be heard, no notice of opportunity to be heard at this proceeding. No chance to cross-examine. No evidence has been offered by the Commonwealth. No right to cross-examine. Nothing. No notice and opportunity to be heard, exactly like in the Harris case. And then the judge says, now, I listened to your argument on sentencing. It's already been determined that there's a problem. And so that he's in violation of the revocation. And then Mr. Washington is called.
Did he, in fact, make a finding of a violation at that time, or did he say that there's evidence sufficient? Can you clear that up for me?
I think he made a finding. That was the clear import of his statement was that
there's definitely a difference between finding evidence sufficient and making a finding of a violation. Do you know where the on this one?
On page 46, he states, after noting, oh, here's the order from September 15th, he says, the judge already made a determination, and so the evidence has already been determined. That's on page 46. That's the first indication. He's already said it's already been decided. Then on page 40, starting at the very bottom of page 48 and the top of page 49, he says, all right, I find that the evidence is sufficient to find him guilty. That's a finding. He's
well, no,
guilty.
That's saying that he's found it sufficient. That's not entering a finding of guilt.
He has made a finding that the evidence is sufficient to find him guilty in violation of the condition of his suspended sentence. That's decided. That's the finding. Now, I'm going to hear your evidence concerning sentencing. So there's already the improper or ruling that was in the absence of any notice and an opportunity to be heard or confront accusers or anything of that sort. That happens on page 49, also on page 46. So then the defense counsel proceeds to call Mr. Washington to the stand to presumably just put on evidence in mitigation of the sentencing now that it's already determined that he's going to be revoked. And he asked Mr. Washington, are you sure what this violation was all about? And Mr. Washington replies, no. Well, why do you say that? Because I wasn't told why I was being terminated. You never were? No. You didn't have a formal hearing as to why you were being terminated from the drug court? No, sir. That never happened? No.
But that goes back to the drug court proceedings, not the circuit court proceedings.
All right, but he's noting that he's never had a notice opportunity to be heard. And so what have you done to try to figure out what this is about? Well, I filed a motion for discovery on my own.
There was never any complaint in the drug court proceedings about any of that.
Well, subsequent to Mr. Washington getting on the stand, then the defense counsel proceeds to explain. He says, what I've tried to establish through my client this morning, Judge, is that he was never privy to a formal hearing as to the reasons he was removed from the drug court. And I would assert that's something he's entitled to, consistent with the 14th Amendment. What he's entitled to is an answer. He was seeking evidence as to what happened, if that hearing ever occurred, and his request for discovery and the subsequent motion to compel, no response to either one, that the pro se motions.
Wasn't there a hearing on September the 15th before Judge Bonnie Jones, and in which she explained to Mr. Washington that he had tested positive for marijuana on September the 2nd, and therefore was not in compliance with the standards of the drug court?
Well, it certainly wasn't a hearing where he was provided previous notice of the...
And in
any event, the drug court judge could not have made a hearing. The Harris case is clear that the drug court judge can't do the revocation proceeding. It has to be the circuit.
Termination from drug court and revocation are two separate proceedings, aren't they?
Right, but you understand, in the December hearing before Judge Ford, the actual circuit court revocation hearing, he says when it's noted, hey, we haven't had a hearing yet on this, the judge says, no, you have had a hearing. It was back on September 15th. Judge Jones and the drug court made the ruling, and therefore, I'm not going to hear any.
That was reference to termination.
Right, and that was plainly
revocation.
Yeah, it was plainly wrong, the judge's ruling at this point, that the September 15th order could even possibly have deprived him of a right to be heard on December 16th regarding the reasons for why he's being revoked. The judge clearly, though, ruled it's already been determined. Yeah, and therefore, I make a finding, because it's already been determined, you're in revocation. Now let's hear sentencing evidence. That's when the defendant gets...
The plea agreement essentially provided that there's to be successful completion of drug court, and if there's not, there's going to be X sentence. Is that correct?
But
so if the court were just going according to the plea agreement and the termination from drug court, there would have been no need to conduct any sort of sentencing hearing or mitigation or hear Mr. Washington's explanation for why he believed he was terminated or why he didn't know he was being terminated and what the appropriate result would be. So by giving him multiple opportunities to testify and present some evidence in mitigation, if nothing else, Wasn't the court giving him due process?
No. Would respectfully submit, clearly, no.
Explain why not.
It's suggested, if I understood the court's question,
it was
the fact that we already had a plea agreement that already specifies what the sentence is, and if he fails to complete drug court, then the sentence is decided. Therefore, he's not entitled to have a revocation. No, he's still, according to Harris, entitled to have a hearing where he has an opportunity to be heard and present evidence about why he's not in violation, understand what the allegations are against him, and respond to them, have notice and an opportunity to be heard.
Didn't he get that with both Judge Ford and Judge Taylor? Because
no.
He got the chance to present evidence at that point in time without just having the strict liability the plea agreement imposed.
The evidence that he puts on is what he's informed by Judge Ford is that you're now hearing the evidence on sentencing. We've waived sentence, so now we're proceeding to the sentencing stage. And so he starts to present this evidence. Then after he gets off the stand, the defendant proceeds to cite the Harris case and note how he's been deprived of an opportunity to be heard. And after all this, I think Judge Ford essentially recognized belatedly, maybe he's got a point, and that he hasn't had. So I'm making a finding now that he is he's in violation of his, based on his testimony just now, that he's in violation of the terms of the drug court program. Well, wait a minute. Again, he's bootstrapping after the fact that he's already announced his decision. He's now taking testimony was being offered by told. And the mitigation of a finding already made, that now I'm finding that that's actually the basis for making a finding of revocation. But again, if that was the case, it needed to be told with notice beforehand, given the opportunity to be heard on the issues of
reason. But he was given a PB-15.
He was given a PB-15, but again, there was no evidence offered in support of that.
Well, how is that not notice?
That's notice. There is a written notice, but then it just says you're in violation of drug court program. There needs to be evidence offered by the Commonwealth at that point of call witness.
But as Judge Atwood said, the Commonwealth made it very clear that there was somebody there ready to testify to that.
I think what they said was, we don't have somebody here. We need to have continue it to another date if we're going to. What the judge does is say, I've already made the determination. He's in revocation. So he's revoked. And so we're hearing just evidence on sentencing. But after the defendant then testifies on mitigating circumstances, but does reiterate the fact that he hasn't had an opportunity to be heard on the revocation hearing, after the defense counsel points out, this is right on point with the Harris case, and he has not had an opportunity to be heard. Then belatedly, the judge says, all right, I'm taking the evidence I just heard on sentencing and just saying that's in support of revocation. But that's not fair. That's simply not fair. The defendant might have...
I want to make sure you realize you're in the...
The defendant might have said, well, at this point, we rest. We want to have them testify first, explain, and then we respond to their allegations. But he's testifying in light of the context. He's already been told, no matter what you say about the issues of guilt or innocence, you're revoked. And so now the only thing to do is it requires an entirely different approach on the part of the defendant at sentencing than at a guilt innocence stage, and so that was it was not proper for the trial court to try to bootstrap a sentencing evidence mitigation evidence into a trial on revocation after the fact without advising the defendant that he had a right to. And he might have fleshed out the issues more thoroughly about what the problems were with the Commonwealth's pay. He might have elected not to just rest and let the rely on the Commonwealth to try to prove their case. They put on zero evidence, no documents in support of the allegation, and just said, he's out of the drug court. That's it. For whatever reason, now you're in violation. This was not due process. Right on point with the Harris case. And the Harris case cited the Marcy. What constitutes due process under the 14th? They lay out the the various elements that have to be heard. And in my assignment of error, I'm simply, if the judge read the Harris case, he certainly understands what the issue is about notice, the list of things that I noted in particular needed to be considered in this case. And so the judge was certainly on notice of what the argument was. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Fitzgerald?
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald, again on behalf of the Commonwealth. I think it's significant in framing the issue in this case. The defendant's single assignment of error really has two parts. The Harris argument, which was raised for the trial court below, and kind of a separate Morrissey Brewer due process argument regarding notice and an opportunity to be heard that was not argued at the trial court and should not be considered by this court as a basis for reversal on appeal. With regard to the Harris issue that was presented to the circuit court, the defendant got all the due process he was entitled to under Harris. Harris, in essence, held that the defendant was entitled to tell his side of the story, to be heard on why he was being revoked and why a plea agreement shouldn't be imposed. As the court has noted, the defendant had that opportunity, frankly, in spades in this case. He had a this proceeding was instituted by Capias. He appeared before the circuit court with court-appointed counsel, and that counsel certainly had an opportunity at that hearing and also at the subsequent sentencing hearing to explain to the court why that sentence shouldn't be imposed and argued for that forcefully. Significantly, on appendix page 48, at the beginning of the first revocation hearing, defense counsel said that it was his position to argue the 2 years this morning. What he was there to do was argue sentencing, argue whether the sentence should be imposed. He was not deprived of an opportunity to put on evidence. He was there to argue sentencing, to argue under the plea agreement under Harris what should happen next, and he certainly got that opportunity. His client testified then. He testified at sentencing. Significantly, the trial judge in this case ordered a pre-sentence report despite the plea agreement. However, the defendant declined to participate in that report and deprived himself of an opportunity to present the court with the reasons, why he shouldn't be sentenced and held in accordance with the plea agreement. This case also has a slightly different procedural posture than Harris, and this was not really brought out on brief. However, Harris involved a true deferred disposition in the sense that there was no guilt finding entered. This defendant entered a guilty plea years prior to entering the drug court and was continued for a sentencing, which sentence will be imposed, as opposed to a finding of guilt, a finding of revocation. The revocation determination was initially made before he entered the drug court program. And as this court has noted and as counsel has noted, the defendant was present when he was terminated from the drug court. The trial court, who was Judge Jones in that case, on appendix page 18, addresses him specifically, "All right, Mr. Washington." So to the extent that he is there, the trial court sitting as fact finder in this case could certainly have found that his protestations, they didn't know why he was being terminated, were not credible, having had an opportunity to hear from him on multiple occasions and having an opportunity to have him participate in a pre-sentence report that he declined to participate in. But again, that's getting a little far afield. Again, because what Harris requires, and the circuit court testified that it was well aware of the court's decision in Harris, is that he be given an opportunity to be heard. And he was certainly given that opportunity on at least three separate occasions in this case.
Counsel, just to make sure I'm clear about your point with regard to address Mr. Hayden's concern that when he testified, he thought he was testifying for purposes of sentencing and that shouldn't have been used against him for purposes of the basis for his termination from drug court.
Well, Your Honor, it is counsel who controls these cases below. The defendant was represented by counsel in this case, by retained counsel, I believe. And counsel's trial strategy approaching that hearing was they were going to argue sentencing. So what Mr. Washington thought he was doing when he took the stand is frankly irrelevant because his counsel was putting on evidence of his sentence, whether or not this sentencing should be imposed. And he made that statement before the trial court made that preliminary fact finding, before the trial court made any of these findings that allegedly hemmed him in. I think both attorneys were aware of what they were doing there was putting on evidence regarding what sentence would be imposed.
And what exactly was the trial court doing at that point?
I think there's some confusion in the record, Your Honor, possibly because of the gap. We have multiple years passing between when all these things were occurring. We have multiple different judges, different prosecutors, different defense attorneys moving through this process. I think the judge was trying to, out of an abundance of caution, give the defendant more opportunity to be heard. He saw a record that he didn't believe contained these findings. He thought he needed to make them. He doubled down there. However, he was ruling in accordance with what the parties seemed to be doing. Defense counsel said, I want to argue the 2 years today. And they certainly argued that. And at the end of that time, the judge said, you've given me something to think about. I'm going to order a pre-sentence report. In other words, I will do exactly what Harris contemplates. I'm going to take the time to learn more about this defendant to decide whether to apply this plea agreement. And the defendant thereafter refused to participate and, frankly, put himself in a position where the court didn't have the information about him that he claims it should have had.
Position that the trial court did, or the circuit court at that point, did more than they were required to do under Harris?
Yes, Your Honor. Or at least the court did exactly what it was required to do. He had two separate hearings here. The court wanted to consider his past, wanted to consider other options. The court did not automatically impose the plea agreement. It could have at that very first hearing. However, instead, the court continued the matter. They got a probation officer there for the sentencing hearing. And again, it's significant on both these occasions. The defendant was represented by counsel. We're in a judicial proceeding. It's not like Morrissey and Brewer, which were administrative proceedings, which the Virginia Supreme Court has recognized in subsequent case law, that when we're talking about a proceeding before the circuit court, when you're represented by counsel, when this has been instituted by habeas, and frankly, had this issue been raised below, we would have a major violation report in this record, and the court would know exactly what the defendant knew, before coming to that proceeding. However, because that due process issue wasn't raised in this particular iteration below, that's not in this record, and we tried to have it sorted up, but it was apparently not part of the record for this exact reason, is that no one thought this was an issue below. To the extent the defendant thought it was an issue, rather his counsel did not think it was an issue below. And as we argued on brief, it is the lawyer who controls the strategy in these cases, the evidence that's going to be presented, and he has to defer to how his counsel chose to litigate this case, which was properly to argue that this two-year plea agreement maybe shouldn't be imposed for whatever reason. However, just because the trial court ultimately disagreed with him doesn't mean the court didn't take other factors into consideration. This court has to consider that the trial court is presumed to know and follow the law, and here the trial court expressly said, I believe it's Appendix 99. I have a range of sites, so I won't give them. But the trial court expressly said, I'm very familiar with Harris. Like, don't you want to spend your time telling me about you, not about the law? I'm familiar with Harris. I've read Harris. And so in a situation like that, we have to assume this judge, having read Harris, took all those factors into account, and because he came to a conclusion the defendant doesn't agree with, doesn't mean he wasn't following the law. And certainly he heard from counsel at that stage of the proceedings, he heard from counsel at the revocation proceeding. There was certainly both notice and an opportunity to be heard, and counsel was heard on the issues that he wished to be heard on. Whether Mr. Washington, in retrospect, wishes he had raised different issues, is a different story that's not one that this court can resolve on direct appeal. To the extent the court were to wish that reached that due process issue that wasn't raised below, again, I've said this multiple times, but we have a proceeding that's initiated by a written habeas. We have a defendant who's represented by counsel who has multiple hearings before the court, who testifies multiple times before the court. And again, even at sentencing, at allocution, and was present during the drug court termination. And of course, only the circuit court has the authority to terminate the defendant's liberty interest, so we shouldn't be particularly concerned with what happened at drug court, given the abundance of process, if you will, that happened at the circuit court level. But the defendant was certainly present. He was addressed directly by the court at that time, and it became clear through his testimony before the circuit court that he was aware that he was terminated for repeated drug use. Which is the purpose of the drug program. It's not a situation like Harris where he's alleging he goofed off, or like this court's other cases where someone had a physical problem that prevented them from participating. He was terminated from drug court for drug use, and the court could certainly take that into consideration in deciding to impose his plea agreement. I'm happy to answer further questions the court has about the due process argument or about the defendant's revocation.
It appears we have none.
I'd ask you to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Mr. Hayden, you have a few seconds left. You're welcome to use them in rebuttal if you wish.
Well, Your Honor, so although there's a revocation in December, suddenly at the end the judge announces, nope, it's supposed to be a sentencing. He says, nope, it's a revocation. Now I'm continuing out to April for sentencing. At the sentencing in April before Judge Taylor, Washington and his counsel again raise Harris, and Taylor says, rejects the Washington's arguments, saying, you did have a hearing. Judge Jones gave you a hearing back in September 2015. That's actually when you were terminated, the actual order terminated back in September. So again, even at the sentencing hearing in April, the judge is still citing the wrong, that this order in September, the revocation thing, somehow was an opportunity to be heard. Plainly, at the hearing on September, although the defendant was technically present, he was never even asked, how do you respond, or to testify, or anything. He's just there. You're out of the program. That's it. At the end of the line is what she told him. That's it. That's not an opportunity to be heard. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you. That concludes the docket. We'll step down and greet counsel, and then the court will be adjourned.
All rise.